I want to start off by telling you about something that's incredibly exciting for all of us here at WHFR, and that is the return of the WHFR record show. It takes place tomorrow. First time since 2019 we've been able to do this, for obvious reasons, in 2020 and last year as well. We will have dozens of vendors featuring thousands of records, CDs, videos, and other music memorabilia for sale by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors. It all kicks off tomorrow at 9 a.m. here on the Henry Ford College campus in Building M and continues until 4 o'clock. We do hope to see you there for the 13th annual-ish, I guess, because it's the first one in 3 years, the 13th WHFR record show taking place tomorrow. We'll be back to kick things off on the WHFR Journal in just a moment. Do stay tuned.
Hey, this is the Gothicbilly Man, your friendly neighborhood beatnik, inviting you to join me for the Wrecking Hours, Psychobilly Surf Rock and Rockabilly radio program. Tune in every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. on 89.3 FM in Detroit, WHFR.FM online. It's the station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw here this Friday afternoon. We certainly do hope to see you tomorrow at the WHFR Record Show right here on the Henry Ford College campus. Once again, for more information about that, visit our website at WHFR.FM. In addition to the record show, there's a lot of other very, very exciting and interesting things going on here on the campus at Henry Ford College. And as we always say, it always the world leads you where the stomach leads you kind of thing. So let's bring in our next guest and talk about things going on here at Henry Ford College.
Sounds good. That is absolutely my philosophy, I'll tell you, Alan. And we have no one better to speak to the matters of the stomach, matters of the soul, than the chef de cuisine at Henry Ford College and instructor in the culinary arts department, Chef Joseph Cosenza. Chef Joe, we know how busy you and your entire team is getting ready for a pretty big event taking place today. And we are also very excited that we hit October and we can start talking Oktoberfest. So for our sort of outward facing public that is going to have an opportunity to come to our campus and experience all that is the 5101 restaurant, why don't you tell us about the vibe of what you've got going on this semester with students and so on. And then we'll get into the very specific concept of the Oktoberfest.
So I don't know, I think we talked last semester, maybe the semester before that. We never left. We've been here. We've been here the whole time. We spent, I think, one semester where we weren't allowed to have guests in the dining room, but we're back to full capacity. Last year was a great year for us simply because we were able to run all of our events on campus exactly the way we wanted to. And we're doing the same thing this year. Like I said, no changes. We're just moving forward. We always have.
Awesome. Every time you get a new sort of cohort of students, do things change on your end, or do you more change the students than the students
no,
change?
No, I think what we've seen over the last 2 years is a higher influx of younger students. We've really kind of lost touch with our non-traditional student, so to speak. Those are, in their late 20s, early 30s that are looking to make a career change. We're not seeing that as much as we used to, but we do have a great group of young kids that all want to be chefs. So can't ask for anything more than that.
Pretty cool. They're putting their faith in not only Henry Ford College, but also you and your excellent staff of instructors and chefs. And while that's got to be very exciting and rewarding, it's probably got to be a little bit daunting too. And I'll let Alan piggyback. That was just a comment. I'll let Alan piggyback with his question at this point.
Well, no, I was just curious, why do you think that is? Is it sort of, they've just sort of, latched onto this being something that they're interested in terms of the younger students, how it changes how you approach putting together, you know, what you do, what you want to accomplish on a weekly basis or semester by semester basis. Yeah.
It makes things easier, actually, simply because the students are more driven. They're more motivated. They're focused on learning because they know that they want to be this. They're not in it saying, oh, you know, maybe this is the right thing for me. Maybe it's not. You know, my friend told me that I'm a good cook and I should go to culinary school. These are kids that are driven. And I've got a couple now who I had to threaten with not letting back in the kitchen because they're not doing their homework. So, you know, if you want to spend extra time in my kitchen, that's all well and good. And I have two that spend all week in there. But, you know, at some point you have to do the written work as well.
Multifaceted. When we talk about our student culinary artists, and I love the way that's defined on the website, student culinary artists, not culinary arts students. So they are culinary artists. They're just in the student mode. This speaks to the concept of us as potential visitors of the restaurant. Some of us who work here on campus visit more often than others on the outside. But one of the things that really is exciting to see is when you have a server starting, you know, in the beginning of the term, and then you see them again later in the semester, even a future semester, we do see the progress. We do see them sort of maturing and getting better at what they're doing in that side of things. Would you say that's the same for the food? Like coming early in
absolutely.
The semester is different? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I have. It's hard to judge this semester because the level of student I have right now is probably the highest it's been in a long time. And so we're starting off at a really high level. And when you're starting at a really high level, it challenges me more to make sure that they grow as much as they need to grow over the course of the 16 weeks.
I think any of us who've ever taught a class can understand exactly what you mean by that. So what has that meant in terms of what is on offer now in terms of the current menu? We're sort of in that little transition phase where we started with the seasonal menu with the fall harvest and moving into, you know, the winter seasons and things like that.
So we started with some of that late summer produce that we can always get from our farmer partners, you know, great tomatoes and zucchini and summer squash. We really had a really nice late run on stone fruit with apricots and plums and peaches. And we were super fortunate to get some of the ingredients that we were able to get and have them last as long as they did. Now we're looking at, we've brought some butternut squash on the menu. We have some dates. Radishes will always be on the menu in one form or another. Sunchokes, which is one of my favorite vegetables, is back on the menu and will probably stay there until sometime late spring of 2023, just because they're delicious and I think everybody needs to eat them. Although I fear that if everybody starts eating them, I won't be able to get them as easily as I do. Duck confit for the fall, some braised pork belly. We have a nice ribeye set as usual. We're starting to play with different cuts of lamb, things like lamb saddle that will stuff, and starting to look at, you know, as our seasons change, not just the ingredients change, but our cooking techniques change. So you'll see more comforty style foods on the menu soon as well.
I'm hoping for that. That is my kind of thing. When we talk about students coming into our culinary arts program, we don't want to forget that it's really culinary arts and hospitality management. So while we're seeing students that absolutely want to be chefs, we're also seeing students sort of go through the cycle of some different aspects of running a restaurant, you know, maintaining a relationship with the client, but also internal stuff as well. Do you have a sort of a mindset right now in terms of, I mean, I hate to use the word popularity, but I guess saturation of more people wanting to get into the baking and the pastry stuff versus the culinary arts themselves versus the hotel and restaurant management? I would think this time of season with so many things sort of changing back a little bit since what we've gone through the past couple of years, that some of those areas could actually be booming. What are you finding?
Yeah, we're finding that the industry is desperate for employees, whether it doesn't matter what facet of the business it is. There's always been a large number of transient employees in our industry, which for better or for worse, they were there. But I think now what's going to happen is we'll take a hit in the industry now with some pain as far as who we hire. But I think our employees, as we go through the next couple of years, we'll start to realize that we want higher quality employees and not transient employees. For too long, we've employed people, especially in those customer facing positions, that want to be something else. They don't want to be in service. They don't want to be in hospitality. They want to be a veterinarian or whatever the heck it is they want to be. And that's great. Go do that somewhere else. This is our way of life. And if we can have professional, high quality, high value employees in our businesses, people are going to have a better experience. I would say that in my experience over the last year, service has never been at a lower point than it is right now. It's awful everywhere.
I was going to say, is that externally or internally?
Externally, in the industry right now, the level of service that people are experiencing, whether it's at a fast food place or a fine dining restaurant, service is bad. And, you know, far too often we're hearing the same excuse, and it's just become an idle excuse now. Oh, we're short staffed. No, just do your work, do the job, work hard, do a good job, treat people right. And too often now we're not doing that. I'm experiencing it all the time, and to the point where I don't go out anymore. It's just not something that I do. And I hope that our students will be able to get into the workforce here in the next couple of years and really show people what service is all about. This isn't a job that you can just say, oh, I want to go be a chef, or I want to go work in a hotel and be in the hospitality business and work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday and have my weekends off and my holidays off. That's not reality. And it has to be something that you have a passion for. It has to be something that you want to do, because you're working when everyone else is playing. You know, you said when we opened that, this evening, we are down at Eastern Market serving 500 guests, 6 courses of food plated. So that's 3,000 plates of food. No person who sort of just wants to kind of maybe be in this industry wants to do that. That's a 17-hour day on your feet. That's getting everything prepped, getting everything packed, getting everything to the location, unloading, cooking food, and then at some point finally serving, and then cleaning, packing, unpacking again. You know, we'll be done this evening at probably 3 a.m.
And is this a new event or something you've done before?
No, this is an event that we've been doing for the last 7 years.
Okay. Very good.
And so we're the sole provider of food for this. This is the largest fundraising event for Detroit's Eastern Market. And so 7 years ago, we were asked to help a chef cook the food. And we just established a relationship and a partnership with Eastern Market to not only cook food for them for their gala, but we've helped in the past with educational classes, with, you know, cooking classes for both adults and children, using the market to form relationships with farmers so we can get our produce and some of our meats for our restaurant. That's where all that stems from.
Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something that will benefit our current students, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. They may not be thinking that in the moment, you know, tonight, but it will. It'll pay off. We are speaking on this edition of the WHFR Journal with the chef de cuisine at Henry Ford College's own 5101 restaurant. He's also restaurant manager and instructor at the college, Chef Joseph Cosenza. You've got a great team of people that we have gotten to know and love here on campus over the years as instructors, which is awesome. It sounds like you've got some great new challenges with students. When you're in the middle of that, you know, 2:30 a.m. and you're exhausted tonight, Chef Joe, and you know that you've got to clock back in and start it all up again, you know, for someone that's been a seasoned veteran, if you will, in the business, what is it that keeps you going, not only on the side of doing the preparation, but the education? What's it all about?
Coffee and bourbon.
Well, that's the short answer.
Am I allowed to say that? I mean,
you just did. Yeah, sure. So, what brings you back?
Not together. No, it's really watching the students and seeing, you know, the quality of food that we're putting up on a day-to-day basis. It's not just one event. And realizing that, as much as I want to kick and scream and yell and do certain things and say, you know, we're not doing this, we're not getting this, and we're not doing the third thing. At the end of the day, when you look back at the last 10 years, we've really done some amazing things with our department and for our students. And so the next 10 years, I really am excited to see what we're capable of if we've already done as much as we have.
Well, okay, there's the next 10 years, and then there's like the next 10 weeks and some very important events coming up as far as the program is concerned. So maybe we'll turn our focus there. One of them coming up, well, certainly within the next 10 days, and that is next Wednesday, which is, of course, Oktoberfest. And then we'll start there and go through scholarship dinner and all the other things coming up. So let's start with that. And I know this has been a tradition, and obviously in the spring there's kind of the counterweight when it gets to St. Patrick's Day. So let's talk about next Wednesday, the October
next Wednesday
buffet.
Two services. We do a lunch service and a dinner service. Unfortunately, I believe we are sold out for dinner.
I'd assume that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, right? It's a great thing. You know, but if people still are trying to decide, lunch is a great time to come. We'll have sauerbraten, brats, kielbasa, braised red cabbage, German potato salad, and I believe a seafood chowder. So, you know, lots of vinegar and sour cream, and it'll all be super delicious.
Now, are these as fun for the students to create as they are for us to eat? Is this kind of a chance?
Yeah,
to...
I think this is an opportunity for the students to see a different style of service. So they're, you know, on a day-to-day basis, we're doing a la carte service, meaning, you know, cooking food when guests order it. So they get an opportunity to see a banquet style service this evening, and then they get an opportunity to do a buffet style service, which is entirely different from a prep and service perspective. So they get to see different styles. You know, they're not all for everyone. I understand that a lot of my students come into my class and they stand on that restaurant line and they're like, nope, this isn't for me. And I say the same thing when the buffets roll around. Nope, not for me. I am not a banquet chef. I'm not a buffet chef. I am a restaurant chef. I love it. So but we do what we have to do, and we do it to a very high level, and we make sure that everything is right. And we give the students the opportunity to experience these different styles of service so that they can get a taste of, you know, what is out there and what they can actually do and accomplish and things that they may actually like and don't like.
Yeah. And who doesn't like a bake sale? So I'm just going to throw that out there. We've got, there a couple of hands going up there. I love it enough for all three of us. I'll tell you that. So that it's that pre-Thanksgiving bake sale that is always so popular. And I literally look forward to buying the things I'm going to serve, you know, for some holiday Thanksgiving treats at the bake sale, and also support the students, of course. But how big and how important is making like dramatic changes? Because some of us really like the staples that we get every year, you know, those of us that you know, frequent the 5101 and everything it has to offer. But you know, challenging is it, or how sensitive are you about making some major changes? I recall the big menu change several years back, and it was like a whole big thing. So
it was a whole big thing over nothing. I mean, honestly, that I took a lot of heat for that. from a lot of guests. And I was really surprised at that. And, you know, we have to grow, we have to change, but we also have to make sure that we're giving the students a realistic perspective on what the industry is about. And if we're not doing that, then we become dinosaurs. And when we become dinosaurs, we become extinct. You know, I look at it the same way, I guess, my partner looks at life at Ford Motor Company. If she hadn't moved into EVs, she'd have been laid off. So, you know, we have to change with the times. We have to change with technology, and we have to look at different flavors that are coming out and that are popular at the time and adjust our menus and adjust our offerings based on that. Tastes change. And I think we've now reached a peak where we can really, truly identify what American cooking is. And it is not burgers and French fries. I mean, it's part of it, but at the end of the day, it's taking all of those flavors that we all grew up with that, you know, if I had a Polish neighbor, I might have eaten pierogi, but my mom certainly didn't make them. You know, I grew up in an Italian house, and so that was American food to me. And so now we're taking all of these different flavor profiles and these different techniques, and we're bringing them out, and we're able to offer them to our guests, because that's what people eat across the city, throughout Metro Detroit. And so if we're not willing to change, then I don't know what to say. We're going to continue to evolve. We're going to continue to change menus every couple of weeks. Our bake sale offerings will change. I know that there's a lot of things that people are like, oh, this is like the best thing ever, and I can't live without it. And yeah, I understand that. But at the end of the day, we have to make sure that we're giving a realistic education to our students.
And then from your perspective, what's waiting for them at the end of that education? The restaurant scene, the food scene here in Metro Detroit, just like a lot of things, as we know, there's, you know, been this. Well, I mean, we've been using the word renaissance for the last 40 years, 50 years almost. But this kind of like this, you know, even in the last decade and all of the challenges that have gone on in the last specifically 3 or 4 years, this kind of revitalization, certainly on the food scene. What do you see waiting for them at sort of the end of the Chef Joe gauntlet for the season?
So I think they all need to be really realistic and understand that none of them are qualified to be a chef. They're all qualified to be cooks and line cooks, and they need to go out into the industry and they need to learn. The nice thing about Detroit now that's different from 10 years ago is there is a large group of chefs who are cooking good food, who are using proper techniques, who are managing service properly and doing the right things and putting a focus on executing food correctly. And so what's waiting for them is an opportunity to work for some very good chefs. I think prior to 10 years ago, there were some good chefs. Now there's a lot of good chefs. And what we tell our students all the time, and what we tell our industry partners that we're trying to staff all the time, is I'm building their second and third string. They need to have depth in their kitchens so that these chefs can have a quality of life and take some time off, those who choose to do that. Our students need to have level heads. They need to understand that then when they walk into a chef's kitchen, they don't know anything. You know, they may have an education, but they also need to understand that the chef has his ways of doing things. And you need to learn his ways, not necessarily what you think you learned from me. I have tons of students that come back and they're like, Chef, you're never going to believe what I saw, and you're never going to believe this, and you're never going to believe that. I'm like, great. Well, then change it. Change it on your station. Live up to your standard. If that chef isn't living up to what standard you think he needs to live up to, then do it yourself on yours with your stuff. And try to affect change with the rest of the team, and maybe he'll step up and change. But, you know, that part of it has never changed. It's always been, you're going to be a cook, you're going to start at the bottom, and you need to work your way up. I think any graduate who thinks they can walk out into the industry and open up a restaurant and be successful right out of culinary school, good luck.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, we want to do what we can to support students where they are when they meet you, and you want to do what you can to support them through the process. And then it's not only the skills, but also the common sense and the ingenuity and all that other kind of stuff for any business, for any industry, the ability to ebb and flow and so on. But we want to make sure we talk about briefly the scholarship dinner coming up November 5th, yep. An opportunity for the community really to support what you're doing, to support what's going on there. And note, we do have, this is one of the only programs on campus with a bachelor degree level of academia. And it's not cheap. And some students have the passion, the desire, and the will, but they can't afford the process. So tell us about the scholarship dinner. And then if you would just speak to how we don't have to necessarily wait for these things to come and taste the food at the 5101 with your weekly lunch.
So, okay. Scholarship dinner is Saturday, November 5th. We changed the format of that a couple of years ago. Also, we moved it to a Saturday because we found that it was easier to get guests out on a Saturday night as opposed to a Thursday night. We incorporate a cocktail hour at the beginning. I believe that starts at 6 p.m. We have usually two craft cocktails, and then we offer beer and wine. And one of the big things that we changed is we usually have a jazz trio or quartet show up from our music department and play music during the cocktail hour, which is a really nice touch. Tickets are $55 and 40 of that goes to, my math is off, 40 of that goes to the scholarship fund, $15 goes to pay for the food. At $15 a guest, the quality of food that you're getting is astronomical. It's a ridiculous value. And it's just a great opportunity to support the students. One of the things that I do want to drop in people's ears is next spring, we will be celebrating our 50th anniversary as a department. So stay tuned for more information about what we're going to do as far as celebrating that. I'm sure that it'll be a big deal. It is, you know, we want to honor the two gentlemen that started the program, and Dennis Karski and Chef Richard Teeple, and make sure that we do it the right way. So of course they'll be involved in some of the planning. But you know, it'll be a scholarship dinner as always, but only on a grander scale, I suppose.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I remember I had the pleasure of being here a very long time of knowing and working with both Dennis and Rick. And oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow. What a great legacy. And I'm sure you're all going to be up to the occasion. People can enjoy the 5101 now as you are open for business, lunches and dinners. Just speak to that briefly. And
sure.
how do we go about reserving a table?
You can always call the restaurant. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but you can also go to,
I got it for you if you need it.
It's henryfordculinary.com. You can see the menu. You can get the phone number, and I guess Alan has the phone number.
Yeah, I do.
I should probably learn that one of these days.
No, that's totally fine. Yeah. Phone number is 313-206-5101, 313-206-5101, or simply hfcc.edu/5101. Sorry. Just wanted to throw that one in there. So yeah, go ahead.
So we're open for lunch Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 11:30 to 1:15, and dinners on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 to 7:45. And that's a change too. We decided to open a little bit earlier. So we're open every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for the next few weeks. I believe we will shut down sometime around December 6th so we can do practicals and final exams. But all the information is on our website. You can go to henryfordculinary.com. We always have our current menu posted so you can see all the things that we're offering. And we will start to incorporate where we're, you know, which farms we're using and which partners we're using as well. One of the other things for those of you who are on campus that I do want to mention is that our culinary wellness food truck is back open in the Skylight Cafe. We're offering this week was Asian. I believe next week, we are doing Tex-Mex. So check us out. It's a quick, fast lunch. It's fairly inexpensive. I believe it's $6. And those of you who are on campus that need a quick lunch, it's a great place to go.
Yeah, no doubt. The 5101 restaurant, by the way, and I think we hinted to this a couple of times, of course, connected with Henry Ford College and run by Henry Ford College, is located on the main campus of Henry Ford College here at 5101 Evergreen Road. So if you know the name of the restaurant, you know the address. Not a coincidence. Right here on Evergreen off of Ford Road in Dearborn on our beautiful main campus here at Henry Ford College. So it's an opportunity to stop in, support students, get some great food for a really good price, and walk around and check out the campus. Things are looking beautiful this fall season. And Chef Joe, we know, again, you've got a ton of things. You're always twirling the plates, as I like to say. But we wish you the best of success this semester with your current students. And we know you're impacting them in such a way that we hope to be able to say in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, how awesome, you know, the industry is in this day and age, you know, getting over this hump and moving on to bigger and better. So as always, we thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chef Joe. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Don't forget, at 2:00 this afternoon, Kitty Love coming up, taking us on a trip down Highway 61. We've got some local and extended outward facing blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR, Making Waves.
Please join WHFR on Friday from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. as DJ Kitty Love brings 2 hours of the best in new blues releases and artists from the local Metro Detroit area to the 89.3 FM airwaves. Listen to all hues of blues during the Highway 61 cruise at Henry Ford College Radio, WHFR.FM. Highway 61.
The 13th annual WHFR Record Show is Saturday, October 15th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Taking place in the Student and Culinary Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, the WHFR Record Show is open to all. Don't miss your opportunity to browse thousands of vinyl records, CDs, collectibles, memorabilia, and more from dozens of sellers and vendors. Join us for the 13th annual WHFR Record Show here on HFC's campus located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan on Saturday, October 15th. For more information, please visit us online at WHFR.FM.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw with you until 2:00 this afternoon. Changing gears here on the program today, but also still things going on here on the Henry Ford College campus. Of course, we thank Chef de Cuisine Joe Cosenza talking to us about the 5101 restaurant and all of the great things going on there. Let's turn our focus to another of the great student opportunities and activities that take place here on the Henry Ford College campus, which is, of course, our athletic department and seasons coming up, of course, the volleyball season. And it's going to be a very exciting one here at HFC. And we want to welcome in, certainly a new face to the volleyball program, and also welcome back to the WHFR Journal, the athletic director here at Henry Ford College, Rochelle Taylor. But let's unwrap that present in due time.
Sounds good. I am so excited to always talk about some of our alums who come back and decide to do wonderful things for students, to sort of give back, to use that cliche. But I don't think it's a cliche. I think it's the coolest thing ever. And Rochelle, we know she only picks the best for her teams, for her teammates, for her program. And we know she's got a gem here. So Rochelle Taylor, welcome. Of course, always a pleasure to talk to you. But the star of today's show, the star of today's interview is the very new volleyball coach, as Ellen mentioned, Kia Chambers. First time coaching at the college level, and you picked HFC to spread those wings. We are thrilled to have you. And this is not a school that you are coming to for the first time as an alumnus of Henry Ford. Tell us your story, will you? We're so happy to welcome you officially to Henry Ford College and WHFR.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. So, I am a HFC alumni. I've played volleyball there in 2009. And funny thing is, I played basketball there, too. So I played on the basketball and the volleyball team here at Henry Ford for Scott and Gary Gray a considerable amount of years ago. I don't like to necessarily think about how long ago that was.
because it was in the 21st century. Okay. So those of us that are in your shoes, we can't say that because it's just not true. So
that's true. But when I'm coaching the girls, sometimes when I make references and they have no idea what I'm talking about, that kind of gets to me. Like, you don't know what that means. They don't know about the Pistons that won the championship. So that just kind of gives you guys an idea of how the college kids this age kind of are. I've got my fitness leadership associate's degree from Henry Ford, as well as I am the product of being one of the adult completion degrees. So I was able to go through Siena Heights with Henry Ford to kind of get, be able to do the online school while I was like an adult, which was very helpful. So just bringing it back for me, I've done a lot of high school coaching, AAU, done a lot of camps in the area, and just being here and giving those girls that may have not thought that they have been able or would be able to play in, at the college level, like having them come in starting at that junior college level. And this is my first year at the college level, as you guys mentioned. But just me being able to get those girls into 4 years after playing these 2 years here with me, have them leave with a degree and going off to play.
Now, that 2 years goes by very, very quickly, certainly, at this level. But there's a lot that goes into, either identifying students that are here on campus or recruiting people to come into campus, coming at this from the first time and certainly, as you mentioned, first time at the college level. What's been your approach to that, to how to get to know the girls, women that are a part of the program and to try and recruit more to come on and take it to bigger and better and greater things?
So I will say, when I first got here, the recruiting and making sure that the girls have the right credits and everything, that was probably the biggest kind of eye opener. In high school, most times, as long as their GPA is a certain level, they're fine. But when it comes to this, trying to figure out, do they have enough credits and everything? So just the new girls, it was the ones from last year. One of the girls from last year, she actually played for me coming up for a lot of years, as well as some of the other girls. I've known them from high school. So that was kind of cool, kind of had a welcoming because I did know a couple of the girls. But then with the newer ones, me just kind of listening to them, trying to take things that, because it's my first year in college, just kind of listening to them because those returners had been there. They've been in the predicament. They know the competition. Just kind of trying to listen to them, be open-minded and not necessarily come in like a dictator and wanting to change the culture immediately. Giving kind of a push and pull what they're saying, what I think should happen and trying to figure out what is going to work this season and just changing things a little bit at a time.
it makes perfect sense. It sounds not only generous, but fair and healthy and all those things that we want in a coach, right, Rochelle?
Absolutely. What we got such a gem when we got, look at all the wisdom.
That was going to be my question. What was it about Kia that that you thought was going to be the perfect, other than this tremendous backstory of being an HFC graduate and a product of the athletic program here? What is it that Ms. Chambers, that you're most excited about for this sport and for the athletic department?
You know, and I'll be honest, we hired Kia late in the process. We lost our coach at the end of the season. I actually had hired another coach and they got a promotion on their job that didn't allow them to come in. And then I had to start the search all over again. It was really pretty late to get her in. And I realized that if I was going to be taking a chance on someone and having to get someone in late, what better chance? Why not get a young person? What really impressed me the most was her commitment to her own professional development. So she's a member of the American Volleyball Coaches Association, has attended those conventions, all about learning more about the game and more about coaching and leadership. And then just plain passion. I mean, you can hear in talking with her, she was just really sold on what she can do. And I figured, again, if I'm going to take a chance on someone, let it be someone who I think can come in and be a great role model for our student athletes. And, if she's going to learn about coaching, I love to have to teach her, more of the administrative side when I know it's someone who's willing to learn and wants to learn. And it's really been very, very smooth to have a new head coach come in. And when I say late, I want to say June or something like that for a season that starts August 1. That's very late. But it's been very, very smooth. I have appreciated everything that she's brought to this program and to these girls. And they're competing very well from the very first competition. We didn't win, but we competed. The team had to step up to beat us. So we're all hands on deck. She's doing a great job. And I really look forward to her being here and continuing to grow this program.
Now, nobody can see us on the radio, but safe to say, Kia, you're a few years younger than us and certainly starting out teaching college for the very first time. But perhaps, and I just want to sort of see what you have to say about this, maybe more approachable to women who are more your age, but also specifically looking through your biography, the Diversity Award from the American Volleyball Association, what it means to be a role model and what you're looking most forward to meet, young women at this level and be that role model for them.
So what I'm honestly looking forward to the most is kind of making lifelong connections with those girls, as well as I am not one of those coaches like, yes, it is definitely great to win. But I like for my girls to also kind of learn life lessons. It is like proven through research that women that participate in athletics, when they do go into the adult world, they will be in leadership positions. Most of the women that are in leadership positions and big companies, they play sports. They've been in athletics. Because I feel like athletics help with time management and it helps with conflict resolution. And I'll say, especially like with our team this year, that's kind of something that we have had to deal with in a sense, and kind of like, okay, well, on a job, for me, it's like on a job, how would you react? So I'm looking forward to kind of helping be a stepping stone in a sense for them to have a successful life as an adult. Because a lot of times kids use sport as their outlet. And I always want to make sure that it's kind of like a positive outlet. So I try to always like come in with a smile. I know one day last week we did film and I told them they had to give me a hug to get into the film room. And it's early in the morning, but it was funny because they're like, oh, like that was a nice way to start the day. So just constantly letting them know that like I'm not just here only as a coach. I'm here as a role model, a mother figure, a friend, like letting them know I can come, they can come to me about anything. So I kind of look forward into that, because although I'm fairly young, like my parents are older. I should be closer to your guys' age, probably. My parents have been married for 46 years. My parents have been married for 46 years. So I really think that their wisdom and them being older contributes to how I feel and how, like, in my mind, I'm older than what I am. So I think that contributes a lot to it and me wanting to be a role model.
One of the things that somebody can learn fairly quickly about a coach and a coaching style is literally just going to a game and watching them interact and so on. We hope to do that, and we certainly encourage our listeners to get out there and check out a volleyball game. But how would you describe your style on the court with the whole process, with the interaction with students and all that?
So... You guys are able to see my face, but it's extremely funny to me, like how I would describe myself, because I am extremely passionate because I like love the game. So I will definitely get pumped up. I cheer with the team. I may be yelling commands and stuff at a certain time. I may even yell if I'm upset. But right after I'm done yelling, it's like I'm right back to normal and smiling. I'm kind of like a coach. I try to use psychology and I do things for effect. So sometimes I may yell my girls' names loud if it's something that we've been working on in practice and we've been working on it and then they actually do it. I may just like yell their name really loud, and then I like, they don't know whether I'm upset or happy, and then I'm like cheering and being all loud. And I think that sometimes me being over the top helps them know, like, that's exactly what I've been wanting you to do. And like I say, it's that whole psychology thing. They're like, oh, I'm giving her what she wants. Like, and for me, I kind of get more of it. So typically when people watch me, I get compliments from the refs, like, oh my gosh, you were so exciting to watch, as well as you told them the same thing. And then you're kind of scary, but right after you're scary, you're right back happy and I'm not afraid anymore. So if you guys do come and watch the game and I am jumping around like crazy or yelling, like, just know it's really for effect. I'm not upset, really.
Well, maybe more of a question. It sort of points me in that direction when you talk about psychology, more for Athletic Director Taylor. You know, there's been obviously, certainly in the last couple of years, much more awareness about, you know, mental health when it comes to athletes. And obviously, school is enough stress. Work is enough stress. Social media is enough stress. Then you pile on the pressures of athletic competition to that. What the athletic department here at HFC recognizes in that, and your opinion about that whole concept. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I would say that we are still live streaming this year, although our doors are open for fans. So there's a couple of ways that you can see volleyball and our other sports. And that's on the HFC YouTube channel, as well as, you know, in person. The entire women's volleyball team is very animated. It's contagious. So when she is jumping around and smiling, I went to see them play at Delta College in Saginaw. And it was the first time I guess on home games, I'm so busy kind of administering. I don't know about how I missed it, but sitting there for an away game, they have little routines for every little, oh my goodness, for every little play. And the coaches and the players all, I said, do you all spend your 6 a.m. practice time on the game or memorizing?
You got to coordinate. You got to coordinate.
Figure it out. But it really is. You're absolutely right. They play very hard, and you know, they are playing hard, and they want to win. But I think she's taken away that mental stress. So we want it to still always be a game where the players are still excited to play. And I think that's what happens in athletics a lot of times. The pressure gets to the student athletes so much, the stress gets to them. And that's not really what this is about. You know, you can win and still be relaxed and have fun and enjoy your teammates, enjoy your coach. yes, there are times where she has to, you know, put the hammer down, but then you want to follow that up with, okay, but let's keep doing what we're doing right. So it is a really fun team to watch this year. We have maybe about half the players back from last year. And I'm telling you, it's a different team than last year, just the way they play together on the court. But I do want to, you know, just point out again, you'll pick it up on live stream, but it's even more effective when you're in the gym and you actually hear it and see it.
I just want to add, when she was at that game, like after the game, she was like, "You guys are so loud." And I'm like, "Really?"
Oh my gosh, that's great. So Alan has alluded in the past in some of our journal episodes that he refs and also has coached. And so, Alan, you probably kind of speak this language certainly way more than I do. But as a parent, I know what I would want for my student, you know, for my child that's making a decision to play college athletics, especially when we, as the parents, want them to just to do well academically, most, you know, first and foremost. But the sports part, and I've seen it with students, the sports part can be the thing that keeps them in school for the classes. So they always say, oh, it's this athletics first and then sports. I think some of these students that may not do, they may not be here as much because of the academic side. It's the sports side that keeps them in college. And isn't that a wonder? Whatever keeps them here, isn't that a wonderful thing?
Exactly. It's whatever's bringing them in. Our students have to be full-time in a sport like basketball, wrestling, golf. They have to play two seasons, a two-season sport. You have to be full-time and pass, you know, your 12 credit hours, season one, semester one, in order to continue to play. If that's what's driving someone to stay in school, there's nothing wrong with that, because at the end of the 2 years, we hope, 2 years or 3 years, they are still leaving with a degree. They've picked up tons of life skills to complement what they've learned in the classroom. It's making them a more well-rounded employee, citizen, husband, father, wife, mother, you know. So athletics brings a lot of students here. We have students that are here purely because of our athletic program, but they are students first and foremost. So they're going to leave with being a true student athlete. And I think that's why Henry Ford is happy to support athletics on this campus.
We appreciate and value that so much. And I just feel like that's a really strong way to support this institution and the sporting activities. Speaking of support, we have lots of people that are former players, some that don't have the experience or haven't played, but would love to support this program. How can we as the community get involved in supporting by way of being a spectator, but more importantly, financial support and resources?
Well, support is very important. And first of all, that is the reason why we are, you know, we started live streaming during the pandemic when we just couldn't allow fans in our gym. But that's the reason why we are continuing to live stream, even though our doors are open now, because we don't want there to be any barrier for anyone to have an opportunity to see any of our teams and to be able to support them. And then always through the Henry Ford College Foundation office, there's always an active link to support Henry Ford Athletics through that website, hfcc.edu, and that opportunity to support athletics that way. And then I just, if you don't mind, wanted to add just one thing about what is the focus of our program, really. And it is, we love to have success, but there's so many different ways to define success. And I'm always on kind of like at one point in the year and never really have a chance for everyone, for your listeners to really know how we have finished as a program. I'm really, really, really pleased with how we compete, all of our teams, every year. And just to give you some idea of last year, we ended up, just for your listeners to know, out of our seven sport teams, we ended up with two student athletes that were freshmen of the year on their teams. That would have been men's basketball and wrestling. We had a player of the year on our softball team, our men's basketball team. We actually had an All-American in basketball, but it's our fourth year in a row that we've had a student athlete named All-American by their coaches association. We had 17 student athletes receive athletic scholarships to go on and play at four-year institutions that was representing all of our sport teams. When I say they go on, they literally got scholarships to South Carolina, Maryland, Florida, Arkansas, Ohio, Indiana, New Jersey, North Dakota, who would think, North Carolina. our roller hockey team, which is a club sport, won the national championship this year. It happened to be hosted in Kalamazoo, so it was close. And we had a chance for their family and friends and fans to go down. So we're national champs for roller hockey. We had 15 academic All-Americans, NJCAA academic All-Americans. That means that these are students who have completed at least 24 credit hours with a GPA between 3.65 and 4.0. We have four student athletes with a perfect 4.0. So we're, you know, lots of ways to define success. And then there are many other accomplishments, conference awards that our players won just from the conference or the region awards. But those are just some highlights. So, again, I could not be more proud to represent the Henry Ford Athletic Department. Our student athletes get it done in the classroom. They get it done on the fields. This year, we're picking up our community service commitment again. We used to always have our teams out in the community. Again, with the pandemic, we took a couple of years pause. They're going to be out working together as an entire department, and they focused on homelessness this year, and they've got a project going on that I'd love to update you guys on later in the year. So very, very proud of what all of our student athletes do, and always appreciate the support from both of you and letting us get our message out to your listeners.
Rochelle Taylor, athletic director here at Henry Ford College, thank you so much for being with us today. Kia, I'm just going to give you sort of the last word. We talk about that level of success, and I'd imagine being an alumnus of the program and being able to come back and lead the program is its own level of success for you. I know what it was like going back to my old school. What was it like coming back in that first time and knowing all these places and just seeing, feeling all those memories and knowing that, okay, I'm the one who's you know, sort of got the keys to the car this time for this season and taking the program in a direction?
So first things first, it looked very different. So I do have to make a note of that. I was one of those players that was here when we had the wooden bleachers on the other side with the like dimmer lights. So for me, it just kind of seemed like, you know, how when it's like, you know, when they talk about like when the Red Sea got parted and let's say the sun kind of like was shining down. It was kind of like that. Not just because of the gym was being different. But just for me, I just kind of see it as like unlimited opportunities. Because I know what I was thinking as like an 18-year-old, thinking in high school, this was my last volleyball game that I'm going to play. So just like coming back, and just knowing that there's more than likely girls in the area, whether it's Dearborn, Westland, Trenton, wherever, that they may be thinking that, and I can be that person. I can be that coach who doesn't mind going to watch girls on their high school teams. I coach high school. We know that a lot of times college coaches don't necessarily come to high school volleyball games. So kind of me just showing them that they do matter, that the ones that aren't getting those four-year scholarships straight out of high school, you guys do matter because of the passion that you have, because I was one of those kids. So just me coming back is like keeping the passion in the girls. As well as I want to make Henry Ford a place where everybody or all of our players feel comfortable with coming back to. When I start hosting open gyms and things over the summer, like I want players that played 15, 20 years ago to know like, hey, if I just want to go and play a pickup game of volleyball, like I am welcome at Henry Ford, like I'm forever a Hawk, because I feel like I'm forever a Hawk. And so if the alumni hasn't felt that way in terms of volleyball, like that's going to be my goal. My goal is to kind of saturate the environment. Like, I want to be the school that has to unfortunately turn girls away because we're having 50, 60 girls trying out every year, or to where, hey, you know, I'm having, like I said, I'm having to turn people away because everybody wants to come, because they know that not only will you have a great environment plan here, but you'll be successful in all of those ways that Ms. Taylor mentioned success. Because I agree, it may not, it's not always about the wins and losses. You can have successes in life and awards and everything else too. So yeah, just making it more of a, and not saying that it's not, but making it even more community-based than alumni-based than everybody knowing that Henry Ford is home, like making it that hometown school.
Kia Chambers, we wish you continued success on the court and for your players in the classroom as well. And I suppose that applies to the athletic department at large in pretty much every way, shape, or form. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. That's about all we have time for on today's edition of the WHFR Journal. We do thank you both for being with us for this segment of the program. And Susan, we look forward to seeing you and so many of our loyal listeners tomorrow at the WHFR Record Show here on the Henry Ford College campus. Things kick off at, 9 o'clock? 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock, opens up at 9 o'clock, and then a sliding scale admission. For more details, go to WHFR.fm, our webpage. This is WHFR Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford College. Kitty Love coming up next, a trip down Highway 61, some blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.